National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
After years of delay and genuine excited anticipation by Catholics all over the world, the Diocese of Peoria announced this week that Archbishop Fulton Sheen, Venerable Fulton Sheen, will be beatified later this year. This week on Register Radio, we talked to Monsignor Roger Landry, National Director of the Pontifical Mission Society, United States. And then, this weekend, New York City will host the annual New York Encounter. Register Senior Writer Zelda Caldwell tells us all about it. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News and host of Register Radio, joined as always by my co-host, Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. As you might be hearing some noise on this episode, there's a good reason for that. I'm actually on the Good News Cruise, which we talked about last week, and we are at sea and having a great time, but sometimes it can get a little noisy. And I know that our guest, Monsignor Landry, is also traveling, as he is very frequently doing, so we'll apologize for any natural noise that you might encounter. But in some truly wonderful news, the Holy See officially informed Bishop Louis Tilke of the Diocese of Peoria in Illinois that the cause for Venerable Archbishop Sheen can proceed to beatification. Sheen was one of the giants in Catholicism throughout the 20th century, best known for his extraordinary television and radio ministry. He died in 1979, and his cause for canonization was opened around 2002, and there have been delays over the years, but the news has brought joy to millions of Catholics. And somebody I know who shares in that excitement is Monsignor Roger Landry. As I mentioned, he's National Director of the Pontifical Mission Society, and for the United States, he is also a very frequent and welcome contributor to the Register. Monsignor, hello and welcome back to Register Radio.
Great to be with you, Matthew, from the JFK Delta Club Lounge, but excited all week about the great news about my predecessor, Fulton J. Sheen, the National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies for 16 years, from 1950 to 1966, being raised to the altars, hopefully this fall. It puts a lot of pressure on me, obviously, not just to be a good director, but to be a blessed and holy one.
I was going to say, this is a lot to live up to, isn't it, now with him as your predecessor? But I know you're working very hard to be worthy of his immense record. But let's start with the great news. How did you hear about the beatification, and what exactly does this mean in terms of the cause?
So I was aware that it was on its way because I, when I became national director, tried to use my office in coordination with those in Peoria to try to get this whole thing moving. And so we've been working together to address whatever issues were still remaining. I'm not going to talk about those, in order to allow this beatification to move forward. And so we were able gradually to remove those obstacles, and we were able to let Rome know that the obstacles were done. Rome was very happy likewise, because Fulton J. Sheen is not just known to Americans, he's known to people all over the globe. And so we had formally asked that the beatification move forward, and we were getting regular updates. Believe it or not, still in 2026, we needed to wait for a letter to come through the diplomatic pouch saying that it was going to be happening, rather than getting a PDF or a phone call or even doing a Microsoft Teams like we are now doing this interview. And so we were aware that it was coming, and then we were just planning the date where we would be able to let everybody else know the good news of great joy.
I'd like to ask you both. I know you have each have a personal connection to Fulton Sheen, Matthew, through your family, and Monsignor. You know, he played a role in your vocation. Could you share some of that with us?
In my situation, I grew up. When I first started driving, I had cassette players in the car, and I would listen to two sets of cassettes as I was driving between Boston and Washington or other places in between. One was Scott Hahn's early recordings on the sacraments and on the Book of Romans. The second, which I would listen to over and over again, was every cassette possible from Fulton J. Sheen. I have no idea where his thoughts end and my thoughts begin in terms of approaching so many of the mysteries of the faith, I can still hear him thunder in some of his retreats to priests, for example, in Ireland or here in the United States. And I am just so grateful for the way that he has helped form me as a priest, not just with the individual ideas, but also with the real passion to share the faith, the passion for missions, the passion to bring people into the church. He was a great convert maker. The passion to match the light of the gospel to some of the darkness that we see in the daily newspaper. All of that in my life comes from blessed to be Fulton J. Sheen.
Yeah, in my case, when I was growing up in Hawaii, he actually visited once or twice, as he was wont to do. In his last years, he traveled very extensively. And I actually had the privilege of serving him dinner at our house in Kailua in Hawaii. And even as a little kid, you recognized in him this immensity of just his intellect and, to be honest, his holiness. You could see that. But he also, even in his last years, had lost nothing of the power of his oratory, his power as a homilist, but as a speaker. He was absolutely mesmerizing for the people who encountered him, especially when he was delivering speeches to different banquets and other things. It was a great privilege in my childhood.
That's it. That's an amazing, amazing connection that you have, Matthew. Monsignor, regarding those oratorical skills, in your piece that you wrote for the Register, you said that Sheen is already numbered among Augustine, Chrysostom, Bernard, among the most eloquent preachers of all time. What made him so effective as a preacher?
There were several things. First, his enormous intellect. Second, his having listened and studied some of the great rhetoricians, you could say, and Catholic preachers over the course of time. And then third, his passion as a disciple of the Lord and as an ardent apostle. You know, first, his extraordinary learning. He understood philosophy, especially modern philosophy, from within the context of St. Thomas Aquinas's prism on what's true and what's not true, in a way almost unparalleled by other priests. And so he was able to dissect what some of the issues were in super clear ways. Then he was in England as a young priest, where he got to know G.K. Chesterton, where he read C.S. Lewis, where he studied Monsignor Ronald Knox, where even Tolkien was present at the time. And so he imbibed their capacity for expression. He was able to use short words that everybody could understand and put them together in really persuasive sentences. And then ultimately, one of the reasons why he was able to light so many people on fire was because his heart was already ignited with a love for the Lord. So it was way more than just oratory. It was passion. There's the great story of when he and the Shakespearean actor, Richard Burton, were both proclaiming Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." Burton went first, and he wowed everybody as an actor with his extraordinary voice and his capacity to bring out meaning. Sheen followed, and he not only brought out those two skills, but his great love and his prayer. And Burton said, after Sheen got a bigger applause, that "I knew the words, he knew the good shepherd." And so that was something that made him such an incredible preacher, somebody to whom basically all the great preachers in the United States looked to as a hero.
Yeah, and when he won the Emmy Award, I remember, I think Sheen made the comment, he thanked his writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So it's a demonstration of his great sense of humor. But Monsignor, let's talk about that, because it's easy to forget, as famous as he was, just how important he was in the field of not just Catholic communications, but communications across the country with his television shows and his radio shows.
He was the great communicator. He was the person who informed Catholics about our faith in ways that perhaps their local parish priest wasn't capable. He was listened to in general by 4 million Catholics on the Catholic Hour radio program, and then watched by 30 million Americans opposite Milton Berle on the Life is Worth Living television series. And so he helped first many Catholics think in a more Catholic way. Second, to be much more confident in what they know. Third, much more capable of sharing that wisdom with others. And as a result of what he did, I think he broke down the walls of anti-Catholic bigotry in the States in a similar way to the way Joshua, with a few trumpets, tore down the walls of ancient Jericho. Because Protestants and Jews and other non-Catholic American citizens, when they looked at Sheen, they looked at somebody, they were happy to be an American rather than as a threat, as if he were some type of double agent of the Pope here in the U.S. And that's one of the reasons why his work against communism, not just in political terms or military terms, but in philosophical and theological terms, was really essential, because the opposition to communism in the U.S. couldn't just come from Senator McCarthy. It had to be rooted and grounded in a far deeper way, and Sheen gave that justification. So he is one of the great Americans of the 20th century, not just one of the greatest American Catholics of all time.
Monsignor, you were a perpetual pilgrim on the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage. As you write, Father Sheen, early in his priesthood, made a commitment to make a holy hour every day before the Blessed Sacrament, a commitment he kept. How important was that? And what do you think, what are you hoping for that a new generation of Catholics who don't remember those shows and maybe even haven't watched him on EWTN, what are you hoping they are introduced to this extraordinary man?
That's a great point, Shannon. The day of his priestly ordination, September 20th, 1919, he made two commitments. One, offer Mass to Our Lady every Saturday, and two, keep every day 60 consecutive minutes in front of Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. And he said that's what really tethered him to the Lord, so that he would never stray far from him. And that's where he got to know, not just about Jesus, but know Jesus personally. And he brought that knowledge to everyone. He is the greatest preacher of a Eucharistic holy hour in the history of the church. And whenever he preached retreats or homilies, he was always urging everybody who listened, not to praise him for eloquence, but to do what he was asking, to imitate him in making that Eucharistic holy hour. And so now newer generations are being introduced to that appeal, and many are making those 60 holy minutes in front of Jesus as a direct result of Blessed to Be Fulton Sheen.
Well, Monsignor, I know that we're all looking forward to the formal announcement of the date and location, TBD, as they say. But I know that millions are going to be attending and or watching, following this very closely, as will all of us, EWTN, and you too. So I look forward to having further conversations about the beatification.
What a great Catholic way to celebrate the 250th anniversary of America.
Amen, with one of the greatest American Catholics. And I'm talking about Sheen and you, Monsignor.
Thank you, Matthew.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk with Zelda Caldwell about the New York encounter happening this weekend. This is Register Radio on EWTN Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, here as always with Shannon Mullen. Well, the New York Encounter, the annual three-day cultural conference organized by members of the lay ecclesial movement of communion and liberation, is being held this weekend. Its theme this year is Where Everything is Waiting for You. Register senior writer Zelda Caldwell joins us, and she's been following this for a number of years. So, Zelda, welcome back to Register Radio.
Glad to be here. Sounds like you're having a good time.
Well, as we mentioned at the top of the show, I'm on the Good News Cruise, the Catholic cruise we talked about last week. So we apologize for any noise, but it's a lively bunch. So Zelda, let's talk about another lively bunch, which is in New York for the New York Encounter. First, remind us, what exactly is the New York Encounter?
The New York Encounter is an annual three-day cultural event held in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan. And it's put on by members of the lay Catholic movement, Communion and Liberation. And what it is, they have panels, panel discussions, art exhibits, musical performances, And people come from all over the country, members of this lay group, but it's open to the public as well, to hear talks. And it's really an extraordinary, very unusual thing. And I feel fortunate that EWTN sends me there.
Yeah, Zelda, in your piece for the Register, you talk about this event kind of showing a different side of Catholicism. It's, you know, we write about Catholic conferences around the country, but this one is really different. And you say it's got kind of a European vibe. What do you mean by that?
In the article, I say, like, you might notice something's a little different. Like, outside the event hall, there's young people everywhere. Well, there's people of all ages, but you'll hear a lot of people speaking Italian. You'll see a lot of people smoking cigarettes. A lot of the food they sell is, you know, espresso and gelato and Italian sandwiches. And that's because the lay movement was founded by a priest, Luigi Giussani, in the 50s. He noticed that a lot of the Catholics, young Catholics in Italy, were sort of nominal Catholics. They didn't know much about their faith and didn't take it very seriously. So he asked, when just shortly after he was ordained, if he could, you know, teach in a public high school. And I believe he taught classics. And he introduced them to their faith and the inherent need humans have to believe in God and seek God. And so it caught on. It was introduced to this. It eventually became this movement. And it was introduced to the U.S. in the U.S. in the 1980s. And so a lot of the people who are involved are Italian. They're living in the U.S., working in the U.S., and they've come from Italy. So it does have that flavor, but there are plenty of Americans too.
Yeah, and Zelda, one of the hallmarks of Giussani is to foster an encounter with Christ. I know that he was much beloved by Pope Benedict XVI, but also Pope Francis. So it's interesting how he sort of crosses all of these different dimensions. Can you talk a little bit about the idea of this invitation also in Giussani's writings to see the true, the good, and the beautiful?
Yes, I'm no expert, but a lot of what Giussani loved, classical music, he loved art. He, in like teaching these high school kids, he would take examples from their lives, like nature, art, and show them how to find the beautiful and to connect the way they felt and seeing this to ask questions about what it was to be human, about creation, about Jesus. So it's a lot of people, young people, I think, involved in the movement, find Christ through the movement in this encounter. And a lot of it is connected to the way they are, their encounter with one another. So in the movement, they get together once a week and they read from books that Giussani wrote, and they discuss it. But the people I talked to for this article, they've said, this is not a book club. This is not a study group. It's about the relationship we have with each other, talking about these things, talking about the good, the true, the beautiful. And the New York encounter is a way of doing this on a larger scale and inviting other people who aren't part of this movement to take part.
Yeah, Zelda, let's talk about the lineup. You're headed to New York, and I know there's a lot going on over the course of this three-day event. Just give us some of the highlights, some of the things that you in particular are interested in sitting in on.
Okay. There's 25 different presentations. But I have highlighted, there's going to be a panel discussing the perceived religious revival taking place in the West. That really interests me. It's called Hungry for Belonging. there's sociologists, journalists will be talking about this, and that is Saturday morning. And if people can't go, they can just go on the New York Encounter website, and you can watch this online. I believe it's live streamed. Another one that I think will be good is there's going to be a conversation on the crisis on globalization. You know, what happens to people who are sort of left out with the global economy has made them isolated. It's made them more poor. It's made them alone. It's made them, you know, and react in like funny ways. Like some people are more nationalistic. Some people are, you know, reconsidering socialism as a solution. And that is with Paulo Carozza from Notre Dame, and from a Harvard professor named Michael Sandel, who I believe is an expert on this and talking about the effects of globalization. So that'll be a good one. These are sort of like hot button issues, but there are also, you know, some kind of interesting, quirky things. Like there's going to be a presentation on the couple in the movie A Hidden Life. The movie, so you can learn more about them. There's going to be a beginner-friendly introduction to quantum physics, which I'm not sure. I somehow managed to graduate high school without taking physics, but maybe this is my time. And there's like an electronic rock pop gospel based on T.S. Eliot's Horses from the Rock. And there's also a few panels on Jassani's thinking and some of his colleagues. There's just like something for everyone. If you're interested in the poet Gerald Manley Hopkins, there's going to be a talk about that. There's something on the 19 martyrs of Algeria with the postulator for their cause for beatification.
Zelda, I think one of the things I really enjoyed from your story is you kind of describe how they come up with, the organizers come up with these topics. I thought it was really interesting. How does this come together?
The way it's explained to me is after the encounter, just a couple weeks after, all the organizers spend a weekend together, and they have a massive whiteboard, they said, and they just say, what are you thinking about right now? What are the top issues? What's in the news? What's bothering you? What interests you? And they just brainstorm. And then it sort of comes together sort of organically every year, a different theme. And this year, everything is waiting for you. It's about the desire for belonging and how sometimes people search for belonging in all the wrong places. And that's the theme, I guess, you know, when we're talking about nationalism, immigration, foreign policy, all of these things can be sort of analyzed. That's the idea. You analyze all these things from like your faith, from the lens of faith. And while it's not overtly Catholic, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, Zelda, I'm interested too in a note you make in your article that in quoting somebody you talked to, that going to the New York Encounter gives you an idea of what it must have been like to be an early Christian. Can you talk a little bit about that idea of this need for evangelization today? But I'd also love to ask you, while we still have you, what your own experience has been like at the New York Encounter, because I know you've done several of these now.
Yes. The first one I did really got me hooked. It was Cardinal Pierre was interviewing Bishop Eric Vardin about a book that he had written. And it was just so, I don't know, I can't put it into words, but it's worth, if you don't know Eric Vardin, it's worth going out and reading all his books, because he just has a way of of his spiritual writing just, it hits the heart. It just goes to the heart. And it is talking about, you know, being a light for other people and having that peace that the Holy Spirit brings in for other people. And it really, I found it inspiring. And so there's always something like that. You can go and watch all these panels, and there's always be something like that that you can take home and then, you know, read up and get more books by somebody like Bishop Vardin. And that's sort of, I think, the point of it.
Yeah, well, thank you. And it's worth noting, too, that Bishop Vardin has been picked by Pope Leo XIV to do the Lenten retreat for this year for the Holy Father and the Roman Curia. So that tells us something about how notable he is. And we can also note that Bishop Reka, who is the Bishop of Birmingham, is also going to be moderating one of the panels on those 19 Algerian martyrs that you mentioned. So a lot happening there. We encourage everyone to take a look at the New York Encounter. Well, Zelda, thanks so much as always.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much. On behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and always Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care and God bless.